Yesterday, it came up on a text, and similar theme today from one person, two people yesterday. We're only talking about three people, but we have constant references during the course of this week to the passing of Glenn Barr. Highly respected is how I described him earlier in the programme. Highly respected Glenn Barr, who has died at the age of 75. And there'll be a farewell for him, obviously, with his funeral in the Northwest. Now, people have been raising one specific issue, that the tributes to him, the references to him, seem to ignore his involvement in the embryonic stages of the UDA. I want to speak to Eamon Phoenix about this, and also about the John F. Kennedy files that are being released as well. Dr. Eamon Phoenix, a renowned historian. Eamon, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Just on Glenn Barr, you know, I think it's absolutely fair to say the man is highly respected, but young Catholics of the 1970s saw him very much as an ogre and a bogeyman.
Well, yes, I mean, Glenn Barr was one of these people who actually commenced a journey, I suppose, in the mid-late 1970s, away from supporting violence, away from rejecting inclusive settlements in this place, and moved all the way towards supporting peace and reconciliation and dropping out of mainstream politics. He was born in 1932, brought up in Derry, Londonderry, very much, not just in a loyalist community. I mean, in one of the few interviews he gave reflecting on his life a few months before he died there in the summer, he talked about his family being very friendly with the family of Mitchell McLaughlin. He grew up with Catholic and Protestant neighbours in that sort of pre-Troubles kind of maiden city. And it wasn't until the outbreak of the Troubles, he doesn't give his views on civil rights, but one imagines he saw it as an attack on Unionist power in Northern Ireland. He became very quickly involved in the UDA, on the barricades, in the Waterside in the early 70s, and then he became involved in a pressure group called the Loyalist Association of Workers, arising in the 1970s, demanding internment as the IRA campaign developed, and he became very much a local spokesman. I suppose he hit the headlines in 1973 when you had the election to the Assembly, which eventually set up the Sunningdale Executive headed by Brian Faulkner. He was a vanguard member, a supporter of William Craig, the hardline Home Affairs Minister who had been at loggerheads with O'Neill over civil rights. And he was very articulate, he was very suave, very handsome, in his early 40s at this stage, articulating always a kind of a loyalist working class viewpoint. This became a theme of Glenn Barr. He felt that the Unionist Party was dominated by the old Unionist Party, the Fur Coat Brigade, which marginalised people in the Waterside or Sandy Row. That was a line of his always. And he really became the main man, as it were, during the Ulster workers' strike of 1974, following the rejection of power sharing in the February election of that year, while the executive of Gerry Finn and Brian Faulkner was operating, and the Council of Ireland was very much in the offing. The Treble UC, as they called themselves, the Loyalist Coalition, won 11 of the 12 seats. And Glenn Barr, by that summer, became a key figure in the kind of organisation of the Ulster Workers' Council strike that summer. He became a key operator in the strike, and he became one of their key spokesmen on television. I mean, that long month of May 1974, which saw 35 people die in Northern Ireland and over 30 people killed in the Dublin bombs, he was being interviewed, you know, 20 times a day by British and international media at that stage, and seemed to have a very, very big political career. And I mean, he actually said, you know, he started off, his famous line was, as the Ulster workers' strike toppled the executive at the end of May 1974, we started by running a stoppage and we ended by running the country. And that wasn't an exaggeration, because, of course, the Ulster Workers' Council, that organisation really, the coordinating committee included loyalist paramilitaries, unionist politicians, and they used the muscle, really, of Glenn Barr's UDA and the UVF to erect barricades, to control traffic, to boycott the power stations as the heat and the light went off that summer, forcing Brian Faulkner in the end to pull the plug on the Partial Executive. And we were into the abyss then, really.
Yeah, just on that, because, you know, as you say, into the abyss, absolutely. And that's where we went with terrorism coming from all angles. And he went to Libya with Tommy Little. Tommy Little was one of the most feared terrorists of them all. And Glenn Barr was shoulder to shoulder with him. Why is all of that now sort of ignored? Is it because of the journey post that?
Well, indeed. I mean, one of the reasons was Glenn Barr tried to, it seemed as though he tried to eradicate the memory of those events. He refused to give interviews to a range of broadcasters after 1980 on the 70s. Never spoke about the 70s, a bit like de Valera, who never spoke about the Irish Civil War. He never spoke about those conditions. He possibly had regrets about it. He'd taken stances as a young man in the late 60s. And he actually relaunched his career. Yes, he went to Libya, and he called himself an Ulster nationalist in the mid-1970s. He was elected to the 1975 convention, and there he showed very much a softening of attitude, because William Craig, his leader, broke with the leaders of the Ulster Unionist Coalition and proposed voluntary power sharing, voluntary coalition with the SDLP, something we hear a bit about today from people like Jim Allister. He proposed voluntary coalition, and indeed Glenn Barr supported Craig in this. They were ostracised by Ian Paisley and the mainstream unionist parties, and that was really the beginning of the end of it. He went to Libya, you're absolutely correct in saying, in 1976-77 with the UDA, seeking inward investment, and he also said, trying to persuade Colonel Gaddafi, it was actually 74-75, trying to persuade Colonel Gaddafi to stop supporting the IRA, which he was doing at that time. He returned then to his native city, still involved in the UDA. He was part of the New Ulster Political Research Group in 1978, which produced an important document called Beyond the Religious Divide, and it seemed to talk about the possibility of some kind of power sharing, possibly in an independent Ulster. Well, nationalism wasn't interested in that, and violence was continuing. He made a very controversial speech or two in which he affirmed the cutting edge of loyalist paramilitarism, and he emerged from one meeting with the Labour Secretary of State, Marion Rees, and said, and now we're going to up the ante of the loyalist offensive. Not the kind of language that was likely to lead to reconciliation, you might say, at that time. But then after 1980, he became involved in cross-community work in Derry. He headed up a NACE project involving children from both sides, young people from both sides of the political divide, trying to get them work. He became involved in a pioneering project, which was headed up by people like John Hume, called the Boston Derry Project, which again was meant to attract jobs and investment to the city of Derry, stroke Londonderry, and became involved in that. He obviously dropped out of UDA circles at that particular time. Allegedly, he was under a death threat. And in the 1990s, though, he did articulate the view that he believed that the exodus of Protestants from the West Bank of the city of Derry was part of a campaign of ethnic cleansing by the IRA. Certainly, a lot of Protestants left the West Bank and became concentrated in the East Bank of the city, or dormitory towns. That was very much his line. But he supported the peace process from 1994 and was appointed to the Parades Commission. He resigned fairly quickly, talking about the intolerable local pressures which he was under. And again, his appointment to the Parades Commission was very controversial, much criticised by nationalists because of his background. But from the mid-90s, he became involved with the Donegal Fine Gael TD, Paddy Hart, who was at several times his party spokesman in Northern Ireland. And they became involved in reclaiming the memory of the Irishmen from North and South who'd perished in the Great War. They became involved in pilgrimages, really, to the Somme and to Messines. And out of that came, of course, the Island of Ireland Peace Project at Messines Ridge, opened by the Queen and Mary McAleese, President Mary McAleese, in 1998. And that became very much the kind of marker of Glenn Barr's later career, involved in cross-border, cross-community scenes, and never really referring to his earlier career. So he's a man of two worlds, the worlds of paramilitarism, and indeed a man who justified vicious sectarian violence, and then a man who walked away from all that and indeed was very critical of mainstream unionism. He made the famous remark that if a donkey dressed in red, white and blue stood in the Shankill Road, it would be elected. And he tried to articulate a kind of a loyalist working class response to the problems of Northern Ireland and the problems of unemployment and so on during that period. So an interesting man who lived to the age of 85, I think, older than the papers gave. He was born in 1932.
Eamon, interesting commentary, start to finish. I maybe erroneously said 75. I'm not 100% sure of his age, but certainly...
No, he's actually, he was born 1932.
Yeah, one of the certainly iconic names of the era that we've just lived through. And farewell will be said to him with respect in his native city.